With some universities opening next month, we are beginning to see a steady and widely varied set of announcements from colleges about how they'll handle classes and residential life this fall. Now, yesterday, ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, further complicated that picture. They announced that if you're a foreign student and your university is offering classes only online this fall, you may have to leave the U.S. For more, we turn to WBUR reporter Shannon Dooling. Shannon, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, Tatiana. Thanks for having me.
So, Shannon, I mentioned that ICE released these new regulations yesterday. What exactly do they say?
Right. So what they issued was actually new guidance. So basically, they're giving people a heads up that we're walking back some exemptions that they made back in the spring. Under federal guidelines, international students aren't allowed to have a fully online course load if they're in the U.S. on a F1 or an M1 visa. And so in the spring, ICE recognized that the pandemic was changing everything, including how colleges were operating. And so the agency allowed international students to stay lawfully in the country if their courses had moved fully online. And they allowed that exemption for the spring and the summer semesters. But with this new announcement yesterday, the agency basically said, okay, we're ending those exemptions. And anyone whose school is planning on going fully online in the fall, you can either try to transfer to a school that's doing a more hybrid model, or you need to leave the country.
Information is coming in so fast. Things are changing so quickly. Shannon, with colleges and universities, was this move from ICE a surprise?
You know, I do think that this caught many people off guard because, you know, as I mentioned, the agency had made these exemptions for the spring and the summer semesters and really gave no indication up until yesterday that they were going to make this change back to the sort of standard operating procedure. And nothing about our current, you know, climate is standard operating procedure right now. I mean, obviously, the country is still in the midst of the pandemic. And so the public health concerns, which prompted schools to go fully online, and subsequently, which prompted ICE to make those exceptions, those are still very much a reality. So I do think that this caught some educators and administrators off guard.
Any idea how many students could be affected by this, Shannon? I mean, I guess here in the Commonwealth, particularly, we'd be paying attention to it because we have such a higher education-rich economy.
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, by one estimate from the Department of Homeland Security, which oversees the student visa program, there are close to 77,000 international students in Massachusetts. So it's still difficult to know how many of those people will be affected because, like I said, this is not set in stone yet. This is just a guidance. This is kind of a heads up that we're going to change this policy. And so what we might see, Tatiana, is some universities and colleges deciding, okay, well, then maybe we won't go back to fully online classes. So it's very much up in the air, but there are a tremendous number of international students in Massachusetts.
So with that 77,000 number in mind, have you been hearing reactions? What are you hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know the UMass system is urging students not to make any drastic decisions about their fall semesters until we see the actual policy from ICE. But, you know, in a statement, UMass President Marty Meehan called the ICE guidance cruel. And, you know, he called for it to be revoked immediately. And many other universities are following suit, issuing their own statements today. I would not be surprised at all if we see this challenged in court.
So you just talked about Marty Meehan referring to it as cruel. I can also imagine that some might say, now wait, if classes are all online anyway, there's no need for students to be here in the U.S. So what is the rationale for allowing students taking online classes only to come to or remain in the country? Why would it be cruel to not do so?
Right. That's a great point. I mean, I think one thing to understand, though, is that online learning is not as accessible around the world as it may be to people here in the U.S. I mean, if you think just about, you know, internet access and broadband infrastructure, that varies obviously from country to country. And then, of course, this could drive students to take classes in other countries, you know, like Canada. I mean, I spoke to Aaron Reichlin-Melnick. He's a policy counsel at the American Immigration Council. And he said this move could have a lasting negative impact both on the local and the national level.
All of this will, of course, be of a major benefit to Canada and other countries that have long competed with the United States for foreign students. And the downsides, of course, will be huge for local economies, for universities and for America's really powerful position as a world leader in education.
I mean, of course, Boston is known for, you know, our world-class learning institutions. So, you know, it remains to be seen how big of a hit our local universities and colleges will take, again, because schools could envision or re-engineer their reopening plans for the fall as a result of this.
So, Shannon, I want to ask you, before we let you go, a couple of other questions about other stories that you're following. Boston is one of a handful of cities that's reopened immigration courts. How has that been going?
Not well, to put it bluntly. I mean, we still don't know why Boston was chosen or why any of the eight or so cities across the country were chosen to reopen for more hearings, because we haven't gotten any word from the federal government as to why they're making, how they're making this decision-making process. I should note that, interestingly, immigration courts never closed throughout the pandemic. They just lightened their caseload, if you will. So they were hearing cases just for people who were in federal detention. But now, they've reopened the caseload to people who aren't in detention, and it's been really chaotic. I think it's best to just hear from an immigration attorney. I spoke with Sarah Sherman Stokes. Here's what she was told by a court official after she found out one of her client's hearings had been bumped up 3 weeks without her or her client being notified.
You'll need to call our office twice a week and check with us on every single one of your cases to see whether the hearings have been changed, because we aren't able to send out notices. And that just seems to me like a really impossible way to run a functioning court system, especially when the majority of non-citizens facing deportation do not have counsel.
So, I mean, there's a real concern among immigration attorneys, even among immigration judges that I've spoken to, that all of this chaos and miscommunication will have a real impact on due process rights.
And Shannon, how do we process the fact that only a handful of cities have expanded to take on these additional cases? How do we think about that?
I mean, it's you know, the immigration courts across the country are just plagued by backlogs of cases, years and years long waits for some hearings in some cities, in some court systems. So I think that from the top down, the immigration system feels a need to get back on board and start litigating some of these cases. But again, we haven't heard any communication from the governing agency, the federal governing agency that oversees immigration courts. So it's really difficult to know how they're making any of these processes. We know that Boston reopened for more cases last Monday, and by Thursday, the court was closed for cleaning.
All right. So one more story that I want to get to with you. It's expected that President Trump will refile paperwork to end the DACA program this week. Can you kind of remind us where we stand on that? And do we know any more about what to expect on that and when?
Yeah, sure. So you'll remember that we talked about the Supreme Court decision last month upholding DACA. But that same opinion from the court left the door wide open for the Trump administration to try again to rescind the program, because basically the court said it was the manner in which Trump tried to end the program that was illegal. He does have the authority to do so. So, you know, we expected that this revived challenge would come. It's coming a lot sooner than I would have expected, but we are hearing some reports that it could come as early as this week. It will likely again be challenged in the courts. So, you know, this is going to be around with us for a while, Tiziana. We should certainly expect DACA to be a factor in the presidential election.
So just to clarify that, Shannon, it can be a factor in the presidential election, but if it's going to be challenged in the courts, we might next summer still be talking about this. Is that right?
I think we very well could be. And I think that we'll certainly hear the candidates talk about it on the campaign trail.
All right. That's WBUR Shannon Dooling. Shannon, thanks for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you.